Good morning, and may it please the court. This case presents a narrow question concerning the propriety of granting summary judgment to the government with regard to the adequacy of a Freedom of Information Act search, where the initial search turned up obvious leads and positive indications of overlooked documents.
Mr. O'Toole, if the government had submitted an affidavit that said, we looked through the two boxes yet a fourth time, and this time we had in mind the December 1991 letter, what would that do to your case?
Most likely it would end it. The one thing that I would add is that in the Valencia Lucena case, the court also directed the government to go back to the initial source of the documents, as we argued in our brief. And here, especially in a case where doing that would be very minimal and where there's a close nexus between the source of the documents, i.e. the trial prosecutor, who may have some idea where the other half of the plea agreement is, if the government submitted an affidavit that said, we've looked through the boxes one more time, we've gone to the trial prosecutor and asked her if there's any other place that she might think that the other half of the plea agreement would be, I think that would be the end of this case.
Now, why would they need to do that second time? I mean, isn't it clear? No one's contested there are two boxes here, right?
Well, I think that is what the affidavit says. That's most likely where the documents would be. But I don't think that the affidavit rules out or conclusively shows beyond material doubt that the trial prosecutor, as lawyers will sometimes do, doesn't know of some other place for the document. In Valencia Lucena, which was the case involving the captain's logs, where the captain had referenced some logs during a criminal trial, and the FOIA request was for those captain's logs, one of the things the court suggested in Valencia Lucena was that the government go back to the captain because the captain had such a close nexus with the documents that he might know of some place where those documents were. And in a case like this one, where we're talking about reasonableness and where we're talking about a very narrow search, where we have one half of a plea agreement that's disclosed at the very end of the search, so that the indications of other documents came at the end of the search, and there is, as you pointed out, Judge Griffin, no affidavit that explains what the government did to look for the other half of the plea agreement, even after, and I think this is very important, even after the pro se litigant objected to summary judgment, filed an objection to summary judgment, pointed out the missing document, and pointing out and argued that because of the missing document, summary judgment was improper. And I think those are really the keys here. I mean, we're on summary judgment. The government has a burden to rule out.
Well, I think your best chance is to argue that that there's something about the December 91 letter that suggests that there's another source of information. How big are these boxes? I presume they're banker's boxes?
The record isn't clear on how big the boxes are, but it looks like they're pretty small. And so I think we're talking about a very minimal burden on the government to essentially go back and look with an eye towards the document this time, because it is easier to find documents when you know exactly what you're looking for. And we do know that the first two...
Although the first time, there's no question they were looking for plea agreements, right? There's nothing about this latest, the December 91 document that suggests that there's something unconsidered before, right? It's just your argument is that there's evidence that there actually is a plea agreement that maybe wasn't found before.
Well, essentially what you have is half a document. I mean, you have a plea agreement that says this is half of the plea agreement, and the other half, it includes the other half. And what we have from the government is no response, even when there was an objection to granting summary judgment, as to what it did to look for the other half. And any response on that regard would have been judged under a standard of reasonableness. Now, I think, you know, you could fight over what would be reasonable, and I think from our perspective, reasonable would be looking with an eye towards the document and probably going back to the source of the documents, i.e. the prosecutor. But at that point, I mean, I think we're talking about a very minimal search. That's why I think the Valencia Lucena case is the one most closely on point, because this is not, like in many of these FOIA cases, a request for all of the responsive documents in the King assassination or all of the responsive documents with respect to the Rosenberg assassination. In those cases, I think the standard of reasonableness, what the government needs to do if there's some indication in one of the many hundreds of thousands of documents that there might be another document out there, I think that reasonableness there might require
another. What's the Rosenberg assassination?
Rosenberg execution. I misspoke.
Maybe you're revealing something.
No, not intentionally. Okay.
But I mean, your effort to distinguish Mirapol is simply a question of scale. Is that correct?
Well, not completely. I really do think that this is a case where what we have is an obvious lead. assigned for an obvious lead at the very end of the case that's completely unexplained by the government. That is, that the lead is about as obvious as you can get because you have a clearly responsive document to a narrow request for plea agreements.
But why isn't that true of the unfound documents in Mirapol?
Well, I think the scale of the search is one thing, but the obviousness of the documents is another. I really do think that where you have, and the complete absence of a government effort to look following disclosure of the document. I think it's very important here that the government disclosed this 1 week before it filed its motion for summary judgment. And then in response, so that it disclosed it at the very end of the search. And it didn't have any responses to what it had done in terms of looking for the other half of the plea agreement. And that may well have been understandable and perfectly reasonable until it was alerted to the fact that there was another half of the plea agreement. And I think that in a nutshell is what makes this search unreasonable, whereas other searches that might highlight some sort of potentially marginally relevant document to a search that has a huge scope might come out differently.
How are we to draw that line? Two questions. How are we to draw the line? Are there any cases that seem to draw the line?
Well, I think there are. I think the Valencia-Lucena case draws that line. The Valencia-Lucena case is the captain's logbook case, and it talks about reasonableness, and it does set out the standard that says that the government has a duty to look for when it has obvious leads and positive indications of overlooked material. And it did tell the government to not only search in the Georgia files that hadn't yet been searched, but also to go back to the captain of the Coast Guard ship that had found the drugs that Mr. Valencia-Lucena had been convicted of airdropping onto the beach. And so I think that case, I think, draws the line, and it points out that when you have, in that case, a very small portion of a captain's logbook, so that the lead is an obvious potential lead to that. So that the lead is obvious. It's a small search. It does talk about narrow requests. I mean, the cases do focus on, when you read through the cases, narrow requests. And so we're talking about reasonableness, but we can draw lines in terms of, in a case like this one with a narrowly focused search, where the search discloses something at the last minute, so we don't have any evidence in the record. And again, we're talking about summary judgment too. I think that's important as well, because when you look through kind of the panorama of these cases, I think that a case where the government has gone back in connection with the Rosenberg execution, and gone back and produced tens of thousands of documents, that at that point, there's got to be an end. And I think that is a certainly reasonable proposition. I do think it's...
The question, at least one question in my mind, is there any reason to think that this unfound document is more obvious in any way than the unfound, apparently existing documents, or at least one-time existing documents in Mirapol?
Well, I think there is, because this document is, within a small universe, I think a very important document, and we have a small file.
I don't know. Does Mirapol tell us the scale of importance of the missing documents there?
Well, I think that when the court focuses on the narrowness of the request, I think that's really what the court is getting at. If you have a narrow request, then we know exactly what you're looking for and know it's important. Whereas if you have a very broad request, lots of things could come into it that might be tangentially important. And I think it's also very important to emphasize here that we're talking about a statute that actually is mandatory. I mean, the Freedom of Information Act does say that the government shall make the records promptly available. Now, the adequacy of search doctrine is a practical accommodation that the court has made in order to, the government can't obviously produce every single piece of paper in response to any request that a requester might make, but Congress has told the courts to err on the side of making sure that the government does its due diligence, that when it moves for summary judgment, that it responds, that it resolves all material disputes with respect to whether or not it has adequately looked for the document, so that the court can confidently say at the end that the government shall make the records promptly available, that it has done its everything.
As a practical matter, isn't the problem sort of balancing the burden, which you argue, understandably, in this case, is very small, against the probability of actually turning up the missing document? And under the conditions present here, with, I think, three searches of these two files. I guess I would just tend to think that the probability is rather low.
Well, I would say those are the right factors, but I would say that the probability, I would quibble a little bit, actually a lot, about the probability of turning up the document. I mean, there were two searches, but they were very poor searches. We know that with the benefit of hindsight, and we look at this with the benefit of the hindsight at the end of the search. There was an obvious plea agreement sitting in a small file of documents that the first two searches didn't turn up. And so I think we can throw those out and say we had a third search. Now, if the third search, and it may well have been that the government did this, and it may be that on remand, all they would need to do is provide an affidavit saying we've already looked, but without an affidavit at least saying that on the third search, that the searcher noticed that there was another half, or at least was alerted to it by the objection in the summary judgment motion, went back and looked, has already looked with an eye towards the document. That would be it, because I think that at that point, the diminishing marginal returns would kick in.
Well, but again, going back to Judge Griffith's question, they were looking for the document. I understand your point that they missed it the first two times around, but they were looking for it all three times, and one time they got one responsive document.
Well, not with an eye towards it. And I think this court's case, this court's decision in the Nation case, which involved the search for the Perot documents of his assistants.
Well, it was with an eye towards a plea agreement, right?
I mean, yes.
They three times they looked through two boxes looking for a plea agreement.
Right. And the first two they missed it, and the third one they came up with half the plea agreement and no explanation of what happened to the other half. And I think in the Nation case that involved the request for the Perot documents, and particularly the Chadwick memo, that in that case the court told the government, go back and look with an eye towards the Chadwick memo. That is, you did a nice search, but you may well have missed the Chadwick memo, and it is much easier to do a search when you know exactly what you're looking for, which is the other half of the plea agreement here, as opposed to looking for something that is nondescript. And obviously the description didn't help the first two times around. And so maybe on the fourth trip, with an eye to exactly what they're searching for, this time they can find it, or they can't, in which case the government will be entitled to summary judgment. And if the court has no further questions, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Quan Luong for the appellees.
The obvious question, why didn't you submit an affidavit saying we looked through the box the last time and couldn't find it? How long would it take to look through the box, two boxes?
I think we are certainly talking about two boxes, and I think this. Again, it's not clear from the record how big those boxes are. My sense is that it wouldn't be terribly onerous in this particular instance to go through those boxes, but I think that under the case law of the circuit, the agency has done what's required to do in terms of demonstrating that's conducted an adequate search.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you can say that in light of Valencia, which is a 1999 case. So it's relatively recent vintage, and it says if a substantial doubt has been created, there's a well-defined request, a positive indication of overlooked material, you have an obligation to follow through on obvious leads. That's the standard we set. This is an obvious, I've never seen a more obvious lead in a FOIA case, never. I have never seen a case like this where you get a report from another government. I wonder, what were you all doing? So you get a report that says this plea agreement, and as the other one mentions, and no one says anything about the other one, which is right there. It's only a couple of sentences. Not we couldn't find the other one, or we talked to the attorney, and the attorney said it was destroyed. Nothing. It's dead silence. There's no way you can get around Valencia. It says you got to follow through on an obvious lead. This is the most obvious lead I've ever, I'm not being hyperbolic, I've never seen a FOIA case like this before. There's no more obvious lead than this.
The first thing we note, Your Honor, that it's not entirely clear from the record that the plea agreement referred to in the December 19th, 1991 letter that was turned over to the appellants is actually a document. There's no indication that that was ever reduced to writing. Certainly, it's not unreasonable to presume that.
So you mean the affidavit is just a muddle? That would be another reason to set it back.
I guess my point is, Your Honor, is that it's not necessarily clear from the record that what we're looking for is a document. But to answer your question about Valencia Lucena talked about it was a case in which the agency itself indicated to the requester that a federal record center could possibly contain responsive
exactly
information.
That's exactly what you did here.
We believe that
in this. You have done the same thing. You handed him a document from one of your officials that said there's another document. which is directly on point. It is exactly what you're looking for. And it's referred to in the piece that you give. And then you don't say anything more about it.
I think the important distinction, Your Honor, between Valencia Lucina and the other cases principally relied upon by the appellant is that in each and every one of those cases, Valencia Lucina, Negley v. FBI, Campbell v. I believe Department of Justice, in each of those instances, there was a positive indication of overlooked materials in other physical locations or other record systems.
We don't know where this could or could not be because they didn't say it wasn't in the box.
Well, and my point is that in this case, Your Honor, there is no indication of any other record systems that may contain responsive information.
No, but we don't even know whether we looked in the box to see whether this other plea agreement was there.
Well, we do know, Your Honor, that we have submitted an affidavit, a detailed affidavit from an assistant United States attorney who conducted the third search in this instance, and certainly an assistant United States attorney will recognize a plea agreement, as Judge Griffith pointed out.
The first two times.
Well, again, Your Honor, I think that the focus is upon what we have done up to this point to demonstrate that we've conducted an adequate search.
Okay, we all practice law here. I'm really not getting this. Why was this case brought up? Why didn't you say, fine, we'll go get this? This is really ridiculous. This is at a court of appeals level, and we're quibbling over something like this when you could have cleared this up. You all don't have work to do?
Well, again, Your Honor, I think
this is the silliest thing I've ever seen. Why are we here? You could have cleared this. What is at stake? What do you think is? You're putting something at stake now when you could have avoided everything and just gone and gotten a simple affidavit and put it to rest. Why wouldn't a U.S. government attorney say, "Oh, please, let us get. Just give us a minute. We'll call the attorney, see if they have anything. We'll make sure that this meant to say there's nothing more in the box." And then it's over with.
And again, Your Honor, I think under the law of the circuit, it's our obligation to demonstrate that we've conducted an adequate search. And I think it's well settled that an adequate search depends upon the methods conducted and the search undertaken.
That's one thing if you have the Rosenberg assassination case or execution case, but you don't. You've got two boxes here. I think what I don't want to put words in Judge Edwards' mouth, but my concern is quite apart from the legal standards here.
Right.
I'm just stunned. At why you all didn't spend an extra half an hour and put one extra line on the affidavit, and then the case is probably over.
What's
the reason you're here? What's the decision-making process?
You're looking for a precedent, which is a dangerous game.
Yeah, what are you looking for? Because you may get just the opposite.
And again, Your Honors, I think that in conducting the search and in setting forth the affidavits, the agency was attempting to comply with what's required under the law. So we set forth detailed declarations.
Counsel, sometimes you use common sense. You just look at it and say, this is nothing. Just give them the answer. As soon as someone received that affidavit, someone should have sent it back and said, would you please fill? We don't want to go up. We might get Edwards on the panel. Come on. This makes no sense.
Your Honor, it's well settled in the circuit that a missing document does not render
It is well settled in the circuit under Valencia 1999 case. You have to follow through an obvious lead.
Correct.
You don't have any doubt there's an obvious lead, do you?
Well, actually, we do dispute that, Your Honor, because, again, in Valencia Lucina, the court indicated that the reason it found that the search was not adequate was because an obvious lead pointed to other physical locations or other record systems that had not been searched. In this case, this December 19, 1991 document doesn't point to any other record systems or other physical locations. Before the district court, at no time did the appellant ever identify any other record systems or physical locations that require to be searched. Essentially, what they were doing was taking the argument that because a missing document is referenced, clearly the search was inadequate. And
someone hadn't explained. That's what they were arguing. He was very limited in his argument today. He said we could lose this one fast if someone gives a reasonable explanation, but there it sits and no one's explained anything.
Right.
That's all they're arguing.
Sure. And again, under this circuit, we believe that we've met our obligation in demonstrating the adequate search that's been conducted,
and
detailed
really
affidavits.
Us to write an opinion, nailing you to the wall on that one. I don't get it. Why don't you settle this thing out when you walk out of here and say, give us some time, we can get this settled, and remand it back? Really want us to write?
But do it quickly so we don't spend a lot of time
writing. You're really not making any sense. You're getting advice from court, at least one of the members. You ought to walk out of here and say, let's jointly ask the court to remand us.
Two of the members.
This makes no sense.
We could invite counsel in. Stranger things have happened.
The other thing is, Your Honors, we would disagree with the appellants that this is a minimal burden. We agree that in this particular instance,
that's the case we have in front of us.
That's the case we're before.
But certainly, to the extent that the agency,
you don't want us to write a precedent that would affect the Rosenberg case. You don't want us to do that.
I'm not getting it. You really need to walk out of here and say, let's jointly ask the court to remand this.
Again, Your Honors, it's our position that with regards to what's required in the circuit in terms of conducting a reasonable and adequate search.
You're not hearing us. We're saying you ought to rethink your position. We know what your position is. We read it, and we're confounded. You ought to rethink it.
Okay. Just to finish our argument, Your Honors, we believe that under the law of the circuit, the focus is upon the focus is upon whether or not the agency has set forth detailed non-conclusion affidavits submitted in good faith, setting forth the search methods that they undertook, demonstrating that they conducted a reasonable, adequate search. We do believe that in this instance we've met that obligation.
The question is the scope of the well-established requirement that you follow leads reasonably, and you have a distinction, which might or might not be telling, between leads that take you to another place or another person, as in Valencia, or that take you back again to the old file. And maybe that's a good distinction, maybe it isn't. But you certainly don't have a circuit precedent on this precise point your way, as is true of the plaintiff.
We would argue, Your Honor, that if there was anything in that December 1991 document that demonstrated that the agency failed to conduct an adequate search or undermine the reliability of the affidavits submitted, then certainly there may be a requirement to go back and do that search. But in this instance, again, we feel that the agency has met its obligations with regards to demonstrating an adequate search. It conducted three searches in this instance, the third of which was conducted by an AUSA. In response to your specific question, Your Honor. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Who did the first two searches?
That's not entirely clear from the record, Your Honor. In response to your point about the fact that there's no specific case on this circuit, we would cite this court to Maynard v. CIA, which is a First Circuit case in which they had a essentially exactly similar situation in which the
First Circuit case?
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe so. In which the appellant in that case argued that the search was inadequate because a document that was turned over referenced another document. In that case, the court found that because the affidavits were detailed, non-conclusory, and demonstrated that the agency conducted a good faith search, that reference to another document in a document turned over is inadequate to undermine the adequacy of the search and the reliability of the affidavits. We would argue that case is
the scale of things in Maynard? Does that lie on the Mirapol end of the spectrum, or are they?
I don't recall, Your Honor, if they addressed
the
I don't recall, Your Honor, if they addressed the scale of the request in terms of coming to that decision. But we think it's important to note that, again, in a very factually similar instance, they focused on what we believe is the proper focus upon the sufficiency of the affidavits and the search as set forth in the affidavits.
And as Valencia says, it can't be sufficient if there's you haven't followed through on an obvious lead. So now we're back in the D.C. Circuit.
Sure. And
that's
again,
what we have to be, right?
Right. Okay. Correct, Your Honor. And
I
again,
don't think you're exactly correct on Maynard in any event, but it doesn't matter because it's the First Circuit and I do know what we say.
And again, Your Honor, we don't believe that the obvious lead referenced in Valencia Lucina was the type of obvious lead that appellants are arguing here. Valencia Lucina specifically said that the reason they found summary judgment inappropriate with regards to the adequacy of the search is because of the positive indications of overlooked material. There's no positive indication of overlooked material here. All appellant is saying is that we need to go back and conduct yet another search. But again, we believe that the record fully demonstrates that the search conducted.
The problem is the inadequacy of the affidavit. There's an obvious lead here not explained. Maybe your search was adequate, but you should have said so. There's a reference to this other document. There is no such other document that we have anymore, or whatever.
Again, Your Honor, we believe that in this circuit, what we're required to do is lay out in our affidavit those
really
records that we searched.
It's up to you. I mean, your boss is sitting right there. He's been around a while. You really want to put this one to a test? This is really
sure.
The law you want developed. And I'm suggesting to you very seriously, you're making a bad mistake.
And, Your Honor, I guess with regards to, you know, explaining an affidavit, missing documents or documents that are referenced, we're not aware of any precedent that says an agency is required to do so.
You have two judges sitting up here, two rather strongly, and one as politely and as gently as he can, saying to you, the words leap out, counsel, and you just, you're not listening.
I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying, Your Honors, and we will certainly take that into consideration when we leave here today. Right. But I guess with regards to what happened in this case, we believe strongly that the agency conducted a reasonable, adequate search, that it set forth in detailed, non-conclusory affidavits that search, demonstrating that it did in good faith, that appellant has set forth no arguments to demonstrate that that search was not conducted in bad faith. We believe that the case law cited by the appellant is not applicable in this instance and does not undermine.
Let me just ask you a question. Suppose you were looking in a file of your own for purposes of getting information on a tax deduction, and you saw a letter that referred to perhaps one of those things you get from charities, saying thank you but not saying the amount. You know you need the amount to back it up for tax purposes. It already been through once. Would you look again? Same old file?
Sure. Your Honor, if I had conducted three searches of those files already, and if I felt that I
now, looked for those... The first two, you never even got the first letter, right?
Right.
The vague letter. So now on the third, two file folders, would you go back and do it again?
I guess it might turn on how much the
deduction was.
Your Honor, if I felt that I looked through my records and conducted a reasonable and adequate search of those records.
No, you wouldn't. You'd think about the tax saving against the effort involved. That's what you'd think about.
Right. I guess, Your Honor, if I felt that I conducted a reasonable and adequate search that first time, for those records, then I, you know,
Maynard, your case that you're resting so heavily on from another circuit says, if an agency fails to establish through a reasonably detailed affidavit that its search was reasonable, the FOIA requester can avert summary judgment merely by showing the agency might have discovered a responsive document had the agency conducted a reasonable search. It's the whole point here. It doesn't look reasonable if you leave untended a sentence which indicates that if you followed through, you might have found some. You don't say anything about it. I don't know how you can think that's reasonable.
I see my time is up.
You seem to think because you can say the number three, that makes it reasonable. And we're not getting that. At least I'm not getting it.
Yeah, I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Go ahead and answer.
Okay. Again, Your Honor, we believe that what's required under this circuit is demonstrating through detailed non-conclusive affidavits that the agency undertook methods such that a reasonable search can be undertaken. We believe that we've met that burden with regards to this case.
And we'll hear from you all. And just a reminder, Judge Edwards might be writing an opinion.
Your Honor, for the arguments discussed today and the arguments set forth in our brief, we ask that the court affirm the district court's finding a summary judgment.
You really have just kind of mowed through. I hope you're hearing.
I hear you.
Well, you have your boss
I hear
there.
You. Right. If I don't hear you, he hears me. Trust me. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
All right.
Mr. O'Toole, is it? How much time is?
And I will try and take up as little as possible because it sounds like we've already spent enough time on this case. Just to
suppose
answer,
the tax deduction in my hypothetical is $10.
I think you'd still look, especially if there were a statute that said you have to file it.
No statute requiring me to take deductions.
Exactly.
Might depend on his gross income. That time might be important.
Right. If you were a public defender, maybe not. Well, and just to answer your question about Maynard, and I think Judge Edwards said most of what I was going to say. My recollection of that case is it did involve a fairly large document search because it was the I think it was a request for the Lyndon LaRouche files that had been sent over to the Swedish government, and there were fairly extensive documents in that case, as well as Judge Edwards pointed out, some language from the court that applies here, which talks about the duty to look for obvious leads. The last point that I wanted to make in response to some of the questions earlier is just to point out that we are amici curiae in this case, and although we do not represent Mr. Clark, we can report back on the argument to him and pass on some of the strong recommendations that the court made in case this case happens to go away. And with that, I will just ask that the court reverse the judgment and send back for the government to fulfill its burden on summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. O'Toole, you were appointed by the court to represent the appellant in this case, and the court thanks you for your assistance.
Thank you.